don't need me again to say a warm welcome, because you'll get that in any case. But it is lovely to see so many of you here. And as you know, our speaker tonight is Leslie Flint, the world famous direct voice medium. And I'm very pleased to tell you tonight that he has brought along some of his tapes. So there will be tapes, a talk from Leslie, and a time for questions. Don't let's waste any time because it's precious. Leslie Flint.
Already? Well, first, obviously, I'd like to say thank you for coming tonight to listen to me. And I'm sure a lot of you have been here before. And possibly I may reiterate things that I've said in the past. If I do, I must only ask you to bear with me, because one has to realize there must be many people tonight who have never been present when I've given a discussion about my leadership. And I'm sure those of you particularly who've read my book, I'm not here to plug it, but I just mentioned, but if you've read my book, no doubt, if you've not had the experience of sounds, not necessarily with me, but with any other physical or voice medium, you would like to know a little more about it. Actually, this is my 41st year as a professional medium. And 41 years is really a lifetime. And quite frankly and honestly, when I come, as I have tonight, to talk about, in particular, my mediumship quite naturally, I find it almost impossible to know where to start. There are so many aspects, not only to my mediumship, of course, but to all forms of mediumship. But mine in particular, I suppose to most people who know little or nothing about this subject, the whole thing is incomprehensible. I always remember, as a case in point, the very first time I gave a seance to Beatrice Lilly. This was during the war years, and a friend of mine, an actor, who had a flat in town near the BBC, and asked me to go there and give a seance in his apartment for some friends. And he said, well, would you mind if we waited a little while? Because B. Lilly, who's on the air tonight, would like to come. She had never been to a seance, evidently. Anyway, any of you who've ever seen B. Lilly on stage know what a remarkable character she is and what a wonderful personality. Anyway, to cut a very long story short, we had the seance. And during the seance, Ivan Novello's mother, Claire Novello David, and spoke to me, and they had quite a little conversation, and B. Lilly was rather taken back, quite obviously, particularly when her son came through, who had gone down, I think, on the hood, and he also had to speak to her. And of course, B. Lilly, being the sort of person she is, naturally wanted to get some conviction, which is every sitter's right. And she said to Claire Novella Davis, tell me something that I can tell Ivor that will convince him that it is you. And Claire Novella Davis said, tell Ivor that I was with him today when he was down at the university talking to his headmaster. And she said, if you ring up, telephone 11 the Aldwych, where Ivor is, after the she didn't call it a seance, the communicating entity, the session or whatever it was she referred to there, you'll find that Ivor has just put his key in the door, and I want you to tell him how urgent it is that I shall have the opportunity to speak to him. Anyway, after the seance, Bea Lilly got on the blower, and she rang Ivor's number. And the first thing Ivor said to her was, I've only just this moment put the key in the door. And then B. Lilly told Ivor that his mother had come to him and would he give her the opportunity to speak to him. After all this, B. Lilly turned to me and she said, well, she said, Mr. Flint, she said, I don't really know, but I'm absolutely confused. I never been to anything like this before, and to say quite frankly, to say all I can say is, although I'm not fully convinced, in spite of Ivor's message, and I presume it was my son attempting to communicate with me, to say all I can say to you is that if you were in the theater, you could make a fortune. But after that, I met Big Lily many times. I met her when I was in America in Chicago. She was playing in a show called Hey Hey USA with Ray Bolger. And I went back and I was introduced to the cast. And I met her many times. The very last time I met her was on the Isle of Capri. We were staying both at the same hotel. And we had many talks about these things. If you were to ask me, honestly, if B. Lily is convinced of survival, I wouldn't really be able to answer the question. Strangely enough, in spite of what was obviously quite an evidential communication from Ivor's mother and other evidence that she had over a period of some years, actually. You see, this I use as an illustration, because what is evidence of survival? What will convince one person? Will not necessarily, and quite justifiably and rightfully, not convince another. Actually, so I could go on about the Ivan Novello story, because I told it, or part of it, although the thing was cut down a bit, on radio in the Ivan Novello story a few weeks ago. And Ivor at that time, nobody knew this, but Ivor at that time was in trouble. It was during the war, and he had been losing his role, chauffeur-driven role, with illegal petrol. And really, he was a victim of circumstances. It wasn't really his fault. And we realized why his mother was so anxious to get in touch with him. She wanted to warn him. She wanted to tell him, quite obviously. She wouldn't tell anyone else. And she had been coming through for at least 6 weeks at odd times in my house, in my sales room, begging us to get in touch with her son. And it was only through B. Lily that eventually we did get communication with Ivor, and eventually he did sit with me on a number of occasions. I use that as a sort of an illustration that even when the evidence, one would have thought, to any reasonable person would be at least very substantial and at least make them feel there must be something in this, and I think that B. Lily would admit that she does agree that there is quite a lot in spiritualism. But whether, I wouldn't think myself that she is a convinced spiritualist. And there are so many facets to this subject. I would be the last person as a medium to suggest for one moment that everything that happens at a seance is necessarily from a discarnate entity. I think that we have to be very rational and kindly critical about mediumship, analytical, and I think I can truthfully say, after 41 years as a medium, that I'm as critical, if in fact I would go as far as to say, I'm far more critical of my own mediumship, apart from anyone else's, now than I've ever been in my life. Because I realize that there are many complexities in regard to mediumship of any nature or any kind, and mine is no exception. And I think what one has to bear in mind is the obvious fact that a person is not necessarily any different 5 minutes after death than they were before. They haven't suddenly become angelic beings. They haven't suddenly become remarkably wise and clever and intelligent and spiritual beings. And in any case, I think that one has to realize from another aspect that if, shall we say, one's mother, who passed over, who was a very ordinary, humdrum housewife and a very sweet, quiet, nice person, you hardly expect her to come back and give a long spiritual discussion or discuss all manner and kind of things appertaining to life after death and her new environment and give you detailed descriptions. In fact, you could go away from that silence and say, well, how do I know that was my mother? There's nothing there to indicate it was my mother. But if she were to come through and say, do you remember, dear, the day I fell down the steps and I broke my leg? And if that actually had happened, then you could say, with some assurance, I would have thought, that it could have been your mother. I still don't say that it definitely was, but it could have been your mother, because she would remember and recount that incident. And I think that people have this often mistaken idea that the communicating entity, because they're on the other side, has suddenly sprouted wings and have access to all the knowledge and all the experience of spiritual life, and that they will come back and they will speak in a very different manner, perhaps, in some instances, to what they would have done when on Earth. Of course, at my seances, we have all manner and kind of persons coming through. And sometimes we have a very elevated individual who will give us a discourse on a spiritual level, which is very wonderful in many respects, and very comforting and very uplifting. And then another day you'll have someone come through who is all blindly or down to earth, if it's possible. And of course, you will sometimes have somebody come through who use bad language. I find that some people have this preconceived notion, and I find this particularly with certain types of people, that they have this religious something that I suppose is a throwback from their childhood and Sunday school and upbringing, that at a seance, when they become interested in spiritualism, that everyone's coming through and it's going to be very elevated and very religious and very on a very high level, which is so stupid. Sometimes a person will come through and say things which in the normal way one wouldn't expect them to. But this is how it is. So people on the other side have many difficulties and many problems. And also, don't forget that we create the conditions by which they are able to reach us. Invariably, of course, at a seance, the only person that can be praised or blamed is the medium. It's always the medium that is put on the pedestal, if he's a very good medium and has a great following and has wonderful publicity. But even the greatest or the best of mediums will have failures. I have some, I had one today, I had one this afternoon. There were 8, 9 people actually. Some of them have come very long distances, and they have had to wait probably, I mean, some of them have waited over 9 months for the appointment. And we sat there, and we sat, and nothing came through. Now, I maintain that this is and should be expected. Sitters quite often, and often people in spiritualism who should know better, seem to have this idea that if they arrange an appointment and everything has been done that should be done from that point of view, they send out their thoughts and their love to their loved ones, that they will go to this meeting on a certain day, and that they will be there and they will receive some communication from them. With the best will in either world, this doesn't necessarily always happen. Sitters create, to a great extent, conditions, and they, to some extent, supply the power. The medium is the instrument. The medium is the person who supplies the physical power, in my case, from the point of view of the construction of the larynx, the construction of the ectoplasmic larynx. But there is still no guarantee about this. We don't know what problems they may have on the other side. And what we have to bear in mind, it seems to me, in all forms of communication, whether it's a direct voice or whatever it is, that all communication, by its very nature, is a mental process. If I want to transmit a message to you, my brain sends the message, my vocal organs respond, I vibrate the atmosphere, create sound, you hear my voice, you hear my thoughts being enunciated. The same thing obviously applies to the people who come to the other side of life. They have to transmit their thought via, in this instance, an artificial voice box, or reproducer, call it what you will, which is temporarily built from the ectoplasm supplied cheaply from the medium, although often the sitters will also supply without perhaps even realizing it. But when we realize that the voice that we are getting is not and never can be the identical voice of the individual as you knew that person when on this side of life, I think then you begin to come to the realization that everything that is given to us from the other side in some form or other has to be transmitted and reproduced. So what we are getting is the thought of
the individual transmitting itself artificially to us via a voice box in the case of the voice, and obviously, in many cases, it is not possible to recognize the voice as you remember it of the person in question. But there are exceptions. There have been occasions when someone has been present at a seance and somebody from the other side has come through, and it's quite obvious that that person has tremendous personality or ego, call it what you will, and in some strange or marvelous way they get through the old self, the old material self, the old reality as they remember it of themselves as they once were when on earth. And you get this most remarkable manifestation, some of which we've recorded, thank goodness. And the voice is identical, as far as one can say. Certainly, we have had people who have said, I knew who that was as soon as they spoke. But it is much more common to say that in most instances, people do not recognize the voice as they remember it of the person that is communicating. What they probably do connect on to or accept is the personality, that some idiosyncrasy that the individual may have had when on earth, and the phraseology, and of course, obviously, the context of the message. If the context of the message is accurate, if it is evidential, then for most people, I would suggest that they are satisfied with the context or the communication. But it still leaves us with problems. And I think that anyone in spiritualism, and so many people do, I regret to say, accept so much that doesn't stand the test. And I think in some ways, in some respects, one should, well, say at least they are being kind. And kindness is a very nice thing. It's a very wonderful thing. A medium wants kindness and never has to do. But sometimes the kindness of some spiritualists seems to me to defeat their own end. To be a good sitter is not an easy thing. I think that one should approach a medium or a sitting with a completely and absolutely honest and open mind. One should be kindly critical and analytical of what happened at that sound and what comes through and how it was produced and what its content is. And one should be fair. Of course, you do get some sitters who, quite frankly, defeat their own ends by putting the communicating entity almost as if they were in a witness box in a court of law, as much to say, well, here I am, now prove it. And as soon as an entity or a relation or a friend or whoever it may be has attempted to make contact with them, they've hardly spoke, you might say, from the other side. And the sitter will say, oh yes, now where were you born? What was the date of your birth? Or when did you pass over? And this, that, and the other. And it's so stupid. I mean, if somebody rings you up on the telephone, and you pick up the receiver, and someone says, hello, this is Fred speaking, is that you, Jack? And your name's Jack, and it's obviously the right connection. You say, oh, hello, Fred. Well, you might know 10 Freds. And you think, oh, my God, Fred, Fred, which Fred's this? But you don't say on the telephone, well, I can't see you, what's your surname, where'd you come from? You say, hello, Fred, how are you? And all the time you're saying, oh, Christ, now, which Fred is this? And you're trying to have a natural conversation, all the time you're hoping they'll say something so that you'll know who the hell it is that's trying to get in touch with you. It's exactly the same thing as a sale. One could go into depth on what is the best way to approach a medium and approach a sitting. I mean, I feel myself that the evidence of survival is phenomenal. I mean, I really mean that. The word phenomenal is tremendous. It's enormous. Even if you were to take out the spiritualistic aspect, and quite frankly, I've been quite honest about this, I do not approach spiritualism from a religious point of view. I think this is something very personal to each individual. There is a project from whichever aspect or angle they feel fit. I don't think myself that it is necessary to be a religious person. In fact, in some respects, judging by some of the so-called religious people that sat with me, is a barrier rather than a help. Because often they have preconceived notions, like you're going to get on this one. Because some years ago I sat with a group of very famous clergymen who were very sincere men, very honest men, and they were each approaching it from their different denominational angles. And quite frankly, it was obvious to me that if we had came from the other side, that this was our preconceived, rather narrow, in my opinion, views and ideas, then, oh yes, that's all right. But if Mickey or some other soul from the other side said something that didn't fit the church's teachings or that aspect of thought regarding it, oh no, 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 no. And you'd be surprised some of the stupidities that go on in spiritualism. And I've said this many times, I'm always dropping bricks here, I might drop one at least tonight. But it's true. I mean, I don't suggest that people should expect anything or everything. I get things through my sittings, which, quite frankly, isn't that I question, in a sense, the integrity of my mediumship, but I do question sometimes the source. Now, this may strike some people as being an odd remark to make, but I think it's true. I am conscious of the fact that mediumship can vary so much, and that people can reach us from the other side on different levels of consciousness. And that, of course, if we can reach, and we do reach, elevated souls who can help us and uplift us and guide us and give us wonderful teachings, so do we, at times, contact entities who are earthbound. They're not necessarily evil, they're not necessarily bad people, sometimes they're just mischievous people who want to have a joke. And I think this is very true, that you do get sometimes at seances people who play the fool. Fortunately, if a medium has good guts, they will keep such an entity out. I am quite convinced that some of the sittings where we've had nothing, where it's been abortive, has been due to the fact, and indeed we have been told afterwards sometimes, due to the fact that there has been interference by low entities or impersonating spirits, and they do exist. And sometimes we have actually been told, I have, afterwards, when I perhaps I had my home circle or perhaps at some other sitting, you had a sitting up there, you had somebody here, never have them inside your room again. Now this is very rare. I think I can honestly say that over all the years of being a medium, I have never heard any condemnation made from the other side. I've had advice or guidance or suggestion, but I've never known any entity from the other side of life condemn another person. But they will, and they have, give advice. If ever I need guidance, which is, I must admit, like the rest of us, we all need guidance at times. I don't mean material things so much. I know, without my having to go and ask the other side, that at the right moment, when it's possible, they will tell me. They will tell me what I should do or what I should not do. And in my early years of mediumship, I suppose it was because I was so young, and although I accepted the obvious, that is the reality of communication, because it was so absurdly obvious to my own mediumship apart from other mediums, but I didn't necessarily always take the advice. And I remember on one very important occasion, a very special occasion, when I wanted this advice, and I felt it was very necessary to have this advice. And the advice they gave me was completely and absolutely opposite of what I wanted to do. And I thought, oh, so-and-so, I've got a life of my own, I'm going to be, you know. And I did what I wanted to do, and I, in a sense, have always regretted it. I don't say the guides or the people on the other side are infallible, of course I don't. And I don't advocate people who go running off the mediums who want to know about their stocks and their shares and whether I should sell the shop or is my husband faithful to me. And I mean, this sort of thing we all know goes on. This, this brings spiritism down to a very low level. I think that we have got to see this whole movement, if I can call it a movement, spiritualist movement, it is a movement for a lot of people. We've got to see it for what it really is. It's a conglomeration of all manner and kind of people on different strata or levels of consciousness in regard to the things appertaining to a life outside this. Some are on this level, some are there, some are higher, and those who are higher seem to me to be very few and far between. And I certainly don't place myself up there. But the point is that if you get the people who are the researchers, the people who are analytical, who are hypercritical, who sometimes defeat their own ends by their attitude and the way they go about it, and then of course you get the other where anything is accepted. Oh yes, friend, that's for me, the lady in the red hat, yes, you know, and honestly, it depends on the square like that. And I think that we want to take the middle course. We want to realize that between psychical research and spiritualism is the real course that we should take. And we should be kindly critical of our mediums and our mediumship, of what we do and what comes through us as mediums. We should be able to discuss with our sitters what our reactions are. I mean, I don't care two hoots if somebody comes to me after sitting and say, well, I'm very disappointed. And I mean, this does happen. Of course it happens. No medium's infallible. If people are only straightforward and frank and open and honest. But I regret to say quite a lot of sitters are not frank, open and honest. Often they accuse mediums of not being frank, open and honest, and I've accused some of that too. But quite a lot of sitters are not. And I think this is defeating its own end from their own point of view, apart from the medium. I think that a medium has a responsibility to himself, he has a responsibility to his sitters, and he has a responsibility above all to the other side. And that is why, when I get a doubt sitting, I really am very sorry, bitterly sorry for the people who come long distances and wait here and look gorgeous. But in a sense, I'm not sorry, I'm pleased. Somebody said to me, I went to a dinner dance 2 weeks ago, a spiritual dinner dance, and I arrived and sat in there, and there was a man and a woman, who I don't remember now, I don't think I knew them by name, and the man looked at me and smiled, and he didn't mean it unkindly. And he said, oh, you still got any doubt sitting? And I said, yes. I said, and if every other medium admitted that they got doubt sitting instead of putting it on, the movement would be in a better state.